everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. This is going to be a special episode, and it's going to be a reoccurring thing, but this one's a little special. I know we have some great other co-hosts like Rick and Ducks and Aaron and all that stuff, but this individual that I'm introducing today, I've known for quite a while. He is the sole reason why I have the brad@outlook.com email address. I have known him for many years, and he's been around the globe and back. And his name is Nick Fillingham. He works for Microsoft, and he's going to be helping us talk about Microsoft 365, some migration stuff, some other good things. Mostly, I'm just excited that he's here because Nick and I have been talking about, well, we've been working together, you know, off and on back in the Neowin days. Nick helped launch Outlook.com, which is how I got the email address. And he's back again in my life, and I'm very thankful he's here. And so, Nick, I mean, you know, just introduce yourself. What are you doing at Microsoft? Who are you?
Yeah, hi, Brad. So I'm Nick Fillingham. I work for Microsoft in the Microsoft 365 org. I've bounced around. I've done some Windows stuff. I've done some small business stuff. I was back on the Hotmail team when we transitioned over to Outlook. And I forgot that we got you that email address, Brad. Like, did we get you the email address and then like sent you the login, or did we just give you the little special heads up when the domain went live? Is that what we did?
Yeah. So if I remember correctly, it was you and Galileo were working on it. And I believe it was you sent me an email address that, hey, here's the registration links for Outlook.com. And it was like 3 hours before the embargo lift. And candidly, I went in there and registered a few email addresses. I didn't abuse the privilege, but I got some family members, some nice email addresses. But yeah.
Yeah, I got one too. I remember we were sitting in the launch room with the engineering team, and I think they were watching as the accounts were being created, and someone's like, oh, someone got Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. Oh, someone got Clark Kent. And they were kind of seeing all the classic email addresses being taken. So there you go. You got brad@outlook.com. Or have I just doxed you? Sorry.
No, dude, my email. And honestly, I remember from the briefing session before this, because somebody, I can't remember who it was, an engineer at Microsoft actually asked if I wanted a certain email address. And I mentioned that, and he said, be careful. He said, here's why, because people are going to go onto random websites and they're not going to enter their own. It's going to be like brad@outlook.com because they don't want their, and I get a ton of that stuff.
I'm the same. I'm nick@outlook.com for my personal email, and so many people, I get people's bank statements.
Yep.
I get their e-tickets for their through their airlines.
Yep.
I had one guy was filling out paperwork for, I want to say, like citizenship or something really important, and he had scans of like every single important document, and I was on CC, and I was like, oh, okay. I politely emailed that person back and said, I'm pretty sure this is not you.
Like, you don't want this. The best thing that's ever come through, and I didn't abuse it, I just ignored it, was somebody bought World Series tickets on StubHub, and they used my email address, and they showed up for, like, it was when the Cardinals were in. And I was just like, I could print these off and go.
It's a test. You're being tested by the universe there. But you're a good guy, and you didn't take advantage of that.
I did, well, mostly because I don't like the Cardinals. If it would have been a team I cared about, we might have been a different conversation.
The Cincinnati Red Straps,
just Reds. You had it though.
Cincinnati, oh, they are the Reds.
Yeah, it's just plain Reds. It used to be Red Stockings, long time ago.
I think Red Straps is better. They should slightly rebrand there.
The Reds.
Although we're not here to talk about email addresses and baseball. I'm sorry, I already took us down a rabbit hole.
No. This is the nature of the podcast, Nick, because it's more casual. It's not a webinar. This is just kind of just laying the lay. To just make it more digestible, if you will.
Cool.
And so the one thing we want to definitely talk about on this, because it's a big popular topic at Microsoft, it's your career as of right now, is Microsoft 365.
Right.
Nick, what is it?
How much time do we have? So a little bit of history, I guess. So Microsoft has a incredible stable of products and services. Yep. Some are, I think Windows is 35 years old. Do you know how old Windows is yet? I should know this. Are we 40 yet?
No, you're not. It was 1985, so I think you're 33 because I was born the same year. I think Windows launched in November of 1985.
Got it. Okay, got it. So we have Windows, we had Office, and then we had all the various kind of management tools. And so over time, what happens is that we end up looking at how our customers are buying products, and we listen to our partners and the channel, and we come up with ways of potentially bringing some of those products together. especially products that are very commonly bought together. And so, you know, I think Office was probably one of the first people are aware of. You know, there were individual, it was Word and Excel and PowerPoint, and at some point they came together into an Office bundle. We did the same thing with our management tools under what's now called EMS.
Okay.
And what we discovered, you know, many years ago is that many, many, many customers would have a Windows license, they would have an Office license, and they would have a license of some of our management tools, you know, SCCM and Active Directory and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And so it started off as just a what we call a priceless bundle, which was just taking those products and kind of bringing them together and giving customers a discount, saying, hey, you're going to buy all three products. Let's make that one transaction, and let's give you a discount to say thank you for buying all three. And I honestly don't even know when that started. That could have been, you know, 6 or 7 years ago. And, sure. And over time, kind of the name has changed, and but the concept roughly remained the same. It was these three products just kind of purchased together under one name, one banner, and providing a discount. And then we kind of realized that there was really an opportunity there to do more with integrating the products.
Okay.
And having it so that it wasn't just three separate products for a discount, it was three separate products that when you deployed them together would actually unlock more functionality and would allow 1 + 1 + 1 to equal more than three, you know, four, gotcha. Five, seven, okay. whatever that equation is. And so that was really about 2 or 3 years ago. And that was when the Microsoft 365 brand was created, because we wanted to put a stake in the ground and move beyond a bundle, you know, multiple products in one basket at a discounted price, to this idea of, no, we're going to take these three very sophisticated, very storied, very capable products. And when you buy them together and deploy them together, they actually unlock more functionality as a whole than they would as the sum of the parts. And so that's kind of really one way to think about Microsoft 365. It's the way that we as Microsoft take the Windows operating system, the Office 365 apps and services, and then all the management infrastructure tools that are part of EMS, and bring them together so that customers just purchase one product.
Okay.
But then once they are deployed, that the sum of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And that is a continuing process. That is not there's no kind of end point there. Like we don't at some point stop and we go, okay, they are now fully integrated, so we're done. We're always looking for ways to make Office and Windows better when they kind of are deployed together and can kind of talk to each other and add extra value. And so when you see Microsoft 365, or if you're thinking about Microsoft 365, yes, it is those three products. It's Windows, Office, and EMS together, but it's intended for customers that are going to deploy those three products and deploy the latest and greatest editions and versions of them, because they will each unlock benefits of the other that you wouldn't get if you just deployed them separately.
Gotcha. So I got to.
How is that? That makes sense.
That is, I mean, that's your, I would say 50 cent explanation, but I think that's the full dollar. I mean, that's
cool.
That's a pretty good, I mean, for people listening to this, are going to be on the technical side. They're going to understand a lot of these product names. I think that's a great explanation, but I have a very kind of basic question for you, Nick.
Sure.
And this is going to be, I think, a reoccurring theme here on this series. If you are on Windows 7 today, can you get Microsoft 365? Like what is the path to Microsoft? I know there's going to be people on Windows 10, but a lot of our audience is on Windows 7 and they're thinking, well, I'm not on that stuff. Why would I buy it? Like how does that work?
The answer is yes, absolutely. So, if you are on Windows 7 right now, unless you have a very kind of nuanced or perhaps extremely old piece of hardware that for some reason isn't compatible with Windows 10. And there are some, but that would be quite rare. Unless you find yourself in that situation, you absolutely can migrate to Windows 10. Now, if you're on Windows 7 still today, you can go to Microsoft 365. When I say 10, I mean 10 as part of the operating system component inside Microsoft 365. The caveat there is what we have found is that a lot of our customers still on Windows 7, especially smaller businesses, are still on the hardware they purchased when Windows 7 first came out.
Yeah, I can see that.
Windows 7 is almost 10 years old. I think it might be 9 years old.
Oh, wow, really?
We looked this up the other day. So you know this, Brad, but the same week that Windows 7 was released in the US was the week that Apple released the iPhone 3GS.
Yep.
And first of all, Apple abandoned the iPhone 3GS platform a long time ago. I don't know anyone still using an iPhone 3GS. I mean, I think you probably would have had to have replaced the battery, if not the screen, seven or eight times if you wanted to keep doing that. But you know, that is a platform that has long been superseded and a piece of hardware that is no longer sort of capable of running the latest and greatest. But we have many customers out there, especially smaller businesses, especially you know, home users and individuals who are not just running Windows 7, but running Windows 7 on that older hardware. And so absolutely, you can upgrade to Windows 10. And for most of those people, the hardware will support Windows 10. It might not be the world's most amazing experience, probably don't have touch, but it'll work. It'll actually function. It may actually be a slight increase in performance over Windows 10.
Yeah, I could see that.
But really the question that we kind of ask is that, is this the right time, and we think it is, the right time to reevaluate that hardware as well and look at the device that you're using and think about, you know, how much did I spend for that on that device? Have I, you know, amortized the cost of that device over the many number of years? What would it cost to get a new device and kind of what would that experience be if I went to kind of, a new modern PC? So to answer your question, Brad, yes. Windows 7 customers absolutely can upgrade from 7 to 10 and go to the full Microsoft 365 suite. We would want them to really look at the hardware they're using and kind of go through that process of thinking about, all right, what will my experience be? Will I be able to have a fully fledged Windows 10 and therefore Microsoft 365 experience on this device if it is older hardware?
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about because there's a lot of people who know that if this is news to you, we have many other helpful resources, but in January of next year, Windows 7 will reach its end of life. And if you want to keep paying for it, it is technically possible, but it's not going to be cheap. It's definitely going to cost. Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to interrupt you just one second, Brad, because we do, so I work in the marketing org.
Yep.
And so one of the things that we do is we do try and correct people slightly when they hear the word end of life, because Windows 7 is not, we don't say end of life, we say end of support. And there's an important reason why.
Oh, you're right. Yep.
Because on January 14, when support ends, your Windows 7 installation doesn't stop working. Yep. It still works. There's no difference between January 14 and January 15 in terms of what can that Windows 7 device do, with one exception. No more security updates. Mm-hmm. So if some kind of issue is found in the Windows kernel, in the Windows 7 OS, in any of the inbox apps, that stuff won't be patched because it's now out of support. And so that takes the risk factor for our customers running Windows 7 from very low risk to some form of kind of elevated risk. And so I apologize for interrupting.
No, you're fine.
There is a nuance there between end of life and end of support. End of life would be like when a service shuts down, like World of Warcraft, or I don't know, I can't remember if they shut that down yet, but something that is a service dependent on, you know, a server providing you, when they turn that switch off, that's end of life because you can no longer access it. Windows 7 is going to reach what we call end of support. And there's just a slight kind of difference in the nuance there. And it's an important one because what it means is that unless we as Microsoft do a good job communicating to our customers that end of support is happening, they may not know.
Yep.
Because January 15 may roll around and they turn their computer on and, you know, they may not realize that they're now not receiving security updates. So we have to go and find our customers running Windows 7, talk to them, tell them that this date is coming and let them know that it's not a scary thing, that it's actually sort of an exciting thing because they have options to just simply upgrade to Windows 10 on that same device. They could go and buy a beautiful new piece of hardware, whether it's a Surface or a Dell or a Lenovo. I'm just looking to see what have I got around in my office here. I've got a Surface, I've got a Dell XPS.
I've got a Surface right here, right in front of me, Surface
and
Book.
You know, there are incredible deals happening and will be, you know, as we get towards January 14, you'll see more and more incredible deals on new Windows 10 hardware. So it's not a scary time, but we do need people to make them aware of that date of January 14, 2020 and kind of what their options are. So I did interrupt you there and I'm sorry.
No, Brad, you're fine. And
go back to your question.
This is why it's nice to have, Nick here, one, because he's extremely knowledgeable on the topic, but you brought up candidly, and this is why I love this podcast series with yourself and many other experts, you brought up a really interesting point that people like myself are obviously very invested in knowing what's going on, yourself included. But to that person who just goes into the office, just logs onto their machine, gets on the internet, logs into their ERP software, you're absolutely right. January 1st and January 31st, their machines are not going to look any different. And educating them and making sure that they're aware that January is when support ends for that platform is actually a pretty significant challenge, because they're more than likely, I would guess, not reachable through traditional IT pro communication channels because they're not reading up on this stuff. And so that is a very serious challenge.
Yeah, and so you know, if we think about commercial customers, enterprise customers, the people mm-hmm. that we need to talk to around the end of support conversation for Windows 7 yeah. are those IT admins. They're the IT pros. They're the folks that are in charge of deployment, or in charge mm-hmm. of servicing, or in charge of management. And so that's why Enterprise Dish is such it's fantastic to be on Enterprise Dish talking to you, because I know that some of the people that will listen to and watch this video are IT pros and yeah, are absolutely. IT admins. And hopefully they're already aware, but if not, we can, you know, make them aware as part of this podcast. That'd be great. We're also running ads. We're also, you know, doing lots and lots of marketing to kind of get the word out there. Mm-hmm. But it's not just about letting them know about the date, and it's not just about, you know, potentially promoting discounts on hardware.
Yeah.
We're investing heavily, heavily in making that upgrade process that migration process from 7 to 10 as, I won't say simple, but mm-hmm. I will say as kind of comprehensive and hopefully logical and as less of a tax as possible to yeah. IT teams. And we actually have a thing that we've called the deployment wheel. We call it the Microsoft 365 deployment wheel. And it's just a visualization of all the steps required to take your Windows 7 ecosystem, mm-hmm. Whether it's running an Office Perpetual Edition or Office 365 or even no Office at all, as well as your infrastructure, whether that be on-prem, cloud, or some kind of hybrid, and get everything up to speed, get it all deployed to Windows 10, get that kind of modern Windows 7 servicing motion in place, same with Office 365, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not going to try and spell out the URL with my voice. Maybe we can kind of put that in the show yeah. notes. Or I don't know if you can do, can you do like the Chiron-y things? Can something go there?
I don't know if we're that fancy quite
yet. Oh, come on.
We can actually we'll
put,
I probably
we'll put,
can
put a link in the you can just search for the Microsoft 365 deployment center.
Oh, we can definitely drop the link that
on
is
your
not
on your issue. Favorite on your favorite search engine that is Bing, and and you'll see everything you need. But we are investing very heavily in those deployment tools, especially in SCCM, to really try and make that process of 7 mm-hmm. to 10 I'm trying very hard not to say the word simple or easy, because it isn't. That's why we have IT pros and IT admins, and that's why these people do the job that they do. But we are trying to make it as taxingless, as least sure. taxing as possible.
And especially at this point in the life cycle of all the products, there is going to be documentation out there to help you. You don't have to go at this alone, and right. there is help available. Realistically, if you seriously need help, just DM me and I can either connect you with Nick or connect you with the right IT pros around the globe who can, you know, help manage that migration.
Yeah, if you need help migrating from Windows 7 to Windows 10, you email brad@outlook.com and he will personally get in his minivan and drive to your place of employment.
Actually, and the first step will be to forward it to Nick at Outlook.com.
We just doxed each other.
It's fun. It's good, man. It's good. This is an exciting topic, mostly because I don't like to use the word new skew, but it's a new thing from Microsoft. It kind of falls into that same vein of Teams, right? It's this new thing that when utilized correctly can add significant value to your organization, right? You got to get the most out of it and take the right steps. But at the same time, it's also going to modernize your infrastructure and make your life easier once you get over that initial adoption hurdle.
And that's a really good segue into one of the things that my team here at Microsoft works on in the Microsoft 365 team. Is we run a kind of a separate conversation or a separate set of messages out to our customers mm-hmm. to make sure that when they buy Microsoft 365, that they deploy the, let's say they deploy in the best way. And, you know, Microsoft is a really interesting company. There aren't very many companies out there where when we sell you a product, you have, frankly, a laundry list of ways that you can go and consume that thing. So it would be like, you know, walking into a car dealership and paying money for access to a car. And it's up to you to choose which car on the show floor, you know, which vehicle, maybe not even a car, maybe it's a truck, could be a motorcycle. And, you know, people just kind of choosing the one that's in front of them or the one that they've always driven and not realize that they have access to a lot of other options as part of this kind of transaction. And so Microsoft is in that kind of funny place. Windows is a great example, or Office actually is a great example, is because when you buy Microsoft 365, there are many editions of Microsoft 365 and license types where you can choose to deploy either the perpetual edition of Office, so Office 2013, 2016, 2019, or you can choose the evergreen edition, which we call Office 365, which is updated monthly, it's always up to date, it's really Office as a service, while installing kind of rich client apps on your device. And so you know, that that nuance is not necessarily very well known. And we have a lot of customers who will buy Microsoft 365 or even Office 365, and they will sort of accidentally go and install Office 2019 or Office 2016 because it's what they know or what they think is perhaps maybe the latest version. So one of the things my team does is we make sure that we talk to our customers and we say, hey, for whatever reason, we have multiple editions of Office. The one for you is probably Office 365. Let's help you get there. And again, that Microsoft 365 Deployment Wheel website has tons and tons of great information to help you move off of a perpetual edition of Office onto Office 365, which is sort of the evergreen deploy once, you know, and it kind of looks after itself in the background. I'm paraphrasing.
We're going to have to do a whole episode on the wheel.
Yes.
I'm very interested in knowing. I don't want to give it all away because then people won't come back for another episode.
Well, I mean, they could just search for it right now and see all of it because it's on the
Yeah. Well, I guess that would be good health life advice. If you're ahead of where the podcast is, go search for the wheel. But we will definitely get Nick's insights through each step. Do you call them spokes or do you call them steps?
Oh, it's a great question. I don't think we have, I don't think we've really decided on the taxonomy of the individual parts of the wheel. Spokes. I like spokes. Let's do spokes.
Spokes.
Is my webcam kind of like freaking out?
Yeah, it flicks intermittently.
Okay. I did find this webcam in the bottom of a drawer about 3 minutes before you called me. So
it's perfect. It's perfect.
It's possibly an engineering sample of like an old, you know, MSN Messenger life cam or something. Most of my hardware is engineering samples that I've dug out of a drawer in a hallway somewhere in a long abandoned building on Microsoft campus.
You can always find gems. You can always find gems in the Microsoft things. So, Nick, as we wrap up this episode, one of the things we always do at the end of every podcast is what a segment we call The Dish. And this is where you can just talk about yourself, like who you are. Obviously, people might say you have a funny accent. They might want to know where that's coming from.
I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio.
He is lying, folks.
Is Cincinnati in Ohio? My U.S. geography is terrible.
No. You were dead on.
Okay, yes. Go red sticks. What are you called?
We'll go with Red Sticks. That sounds
red sticks.
Good enough.
Red
Nick,
lines.
Where are you from? You know, what's going on in your life? What brings you, I don't know, into the office today?
Where am I from? So I'm from Australia. I haven't lived in Australia for many, many years. So I sound funny, but people often can't work out exactly where my accent is from. But yes, from Australia. I've been at Microsoft for many years. I think coming up on 15 now. And I think you and I crossed paths, probably 7, 8, maybe
it was something like that.
9 or 10 years ago, I used to work on the Channel 9 team. So, Brad, if your viewers or listeners are familiar with Channel 9, I was over on Channel 9 for a long time. I'm a bit of a career Microsofty, but have worked for Microsoft in a couple countries. I started in Australia, moved to Singapore in Asia Pacific, and then came over here to the US about 10 or 12 years ago. I actually just got back from Japan. I was in Japan for what we kind of think of as the build for Japan. So we just had the Build conference here in Redmond, in Seattle, which you were here for.
Yep.
And then the team in Japan basically, most years, I think, they will kind of take that content and they will kind of sort of re-present it to the Japanese developer and kind of engineering community. And so we went over for that event, which was very, very exciting. And it was kind of great to see how it's funny, even in the 6 weeks or so since the Build conference, some of those pieces of technology that were announced on stage and demoed had evolved even more. And so we were able to see, you know, it was an amazing HoloLens 2 demo. They had some kind of started some new stuff to show there. We showed some new stuff in Teams. So that was really exciting. But it was a very quick trip. I was on the ground. I was in Japan on the ground for, I think, 50 hours. It's pretty quick. And I think it's about 10 hours direct from Seattle to Narita. So that was a pretty quick trip. But I did get to do two awesome things. One is I went to, I love video games. I'm actually not, I'm more of a, sort of a retro gamer. I'm not like a hardcore retro gamer, but I do like, I like the Super Nintendos and the Nintendo 64. That's kind of my genre. Having said that, I found this thing, I've actually got it here, called Tiny Arcade. Have you ever seen this?
I have not.
So this is, that's the box. This is a Tiny Arcade.
It looks like a Tiny Arcade.
And it is a fully playable, here I'm gonna turn it on. It's a fully playable key ring. Look, it's a key ring. Oh, it's in the camera. I'm sorry. Doing bad camera placement. Fully playable key ring version of Galaga.
Wow.
It's got a joystick. It's got a little start button here. And there's about 20 of them. And Galaga is one. There was a little milk bar down near where I lived back in Australia when I was a kid. And there was the flat tabletop ones you would sit down with. You probably can't see my arms. You know, you put your 20-cent coins in and you play Galaga. Mm-hmm. So I saw this thing. I was like, wow, that's awesome. It's come in this cool packaging. I have no idea what it says except for the front bit, but it's called Tiny Arcade. So that was one of my cool little finds. These could be everywhere. Maybe you can buy these in Walmart. I have no idea. But I thought that was super cool and I loved it. And the other thing I was going to tell you, Brad, from my trip from Japan is people kind of ask, like, what's it like being in Japan? And I say, well, my experience in Japan is that everything is quality. There's no such thing as bad quality in Japan. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you do, where you go, there's no such thing as bad quality. And my example of that is that one of the best meals I had in my 50 hours on the ground was a sandwich from a vending machine in a train station.
That is amazing.
And I think if I said to you, Brad, I want you to go to the Cincinnati train station.
Yeah, there is one.
And I want you to go find a vending machine and I want you to buy a sandwich and I want you to eat it, I think you would probably slap me in the face. Alone say, this was the best meal I've had in months. And but that's my experience with Japan. Japan's amazing. Go to Japan. That's what I'm trying to say.
Top tip from Nick, go to Japan, see the vending machines. You won't be disappointed.
And buy a tiny arcade of Galaga. Yeah.
Well, Nick, we very much appreciate you taking time out of your busy day talking Microsoft 365. We're going to have a lot more coming down the pipeline in the future. And so we'll be looking forward to that. It'll be just falling right in line with our regular Enterprise Dish cadence.
Right.
And Nick, thanks for hanging out with us today. Everybody else, hit that subscribe button down below. And Nick, what is the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions or just want to follow you?
I am on the Twitters.
Nice.
The Twitters, I am Nick Phil, NICFILL. At the moment, it's mainly pictures of my children hugging various farm animals, but I am very happy to have professional conversations there as well. And probably Twitter, I think, is best. And then that way I can get in contact with folks there and help them with any questions they may have about Windows 7 end of support, Microsoft 365, upgrading to Windows 10, happy to help out.
Fantastic. We'll drop a link down in the post below to make that a little bit easier transition over to his Twitter account. To everybody else, thanks for tuning in. This has been another very interesting episode of Enterprise Dish, and we'll catch all of you right back here next time.